Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Actor Charlie Sheen made a big announcement this week that he is HIV positive. So are nearly 37 million people around the world. There have been major advances in therapies and treatment since the outbreak of HIV/AIDS now 35 years ago. So what are these new treatments and what do they mean for the way we think about sex, HIV, and living with the disease? This hour on Point, life, sex, treatment, and HIV now. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you living with HIV? How's that going? How do you manage it? What does it mean for your life? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Listeners, we should note that we will be talking about sex and other adult content in this hour. Charlie Sheen brought it all to the fore. Here he was on Tuesday, NBC's Today Show. Charlie Sheen live making a big announcement.
I'm here to admit that I am, in fact, HIV positive. I have to put a stop to this onslaught, this barrage of attacks and of sub-truths and very very harmful and mercurial stories that are about that threatening the health of so many others, which couldn't be farther from the truth.
He was paying out millions to keep it quiet. He said the news had initially been very hard to take on board, that he had the HIV virus.
It's a hard three letters to absorb, you know? It's a turning point in one's life.
Charlie Sheen's case has received so much attention now. We want to see what we can learn for it, how we can catch up with the state of therapies and living with HIV. Joining us now from Palm Springs, California, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, immunologist, longtime HIV/AIDS researcher, awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2008. Dr. Anthony Fauci, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And from Denver, Dr. Sarah Rowan joins us, interim director of HIV and viral hepatitis prevention at Denver Public Health. It's one of the top programs for HIV care in the country. She's an infectious disease expert, specializes in HIV care. Denver is one of five cities in the U.S. that has signed the Fast Track City Initiative, aims to end the HIV/AIDS epidemic by 2030. Sounds ambitious, but they're in for the challenge. Dr. Sarah Rowan, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being with us. I hope you two will help us just dive into some of the things that have come out in the conversation with Charlie Sheen this week, because I think it's got people's attention into thinking about what does this mean? What does that mean? When Charlie Sheen, Dr. Fauci, says that his HIV is now undetectable, what does that mean?
Well, one of the parameters that you measure how one responds to therapy is you take a look at the level of virus in the blood. It's called a plasma viral load. And it's a sensitive test, but when you get the level so low, it goes below the level of detection of your assay. That doesn't mean that it is gone in the sense of that he is not HIV infected anymore. He still has HIV in him, but it is suppressed to the level that it cannot be detected by the typical kinds of assays that we use. And that has two types of implications, because it is very good for him and his prognosis, because when you suppress the virus to below detectable levels, we know now from many years of experience that the prognosis of that person is really quite good. But also, it dramatically diminishes the likelihood that you can spread the virus to someone else. So that's what we mean by undetectable.
I want to come to that and come to that in some detail so we really understand what that means. Dr. Rowan, when somebody has the HIV virus and then they get it, the virus level down to this undetectable practically level, how is that done? What are the therapies that are being deployed right now to help that make that happen?
Well, we use antiviral medicines to do that. We, of course, support people to lead a healthy lifestyle and take care of themselves overall. But the medicines that we use specifically inhibit replication of the HIV virus. And by doing that, we're able to suppress the levels to that undetectable undetectable concentration in the bloodstream.
Are there a whole raft of those therapies, or is just one or two? Name the ones that are out there and being used so we begin to get conversant here in the language.
Okay. Yeah, there's over 30 different medicines that we use that inhibit replication of HIV. The common ones that we're using now are actually commonly co-formulated into just one or two pills a day. So we use Atripla, which is a combination of three different antiviral medicines. Another one that's commonly used is dolutegravir, and we use that with Truvada. And there are, you know, a handful of others that are really kind of making up the majority of HIV treatment in this country.
Dr. Fauci, what does that mean, first of all, about the health of the person with the HIV virus? When these therapies push it down so low, what's the state of their physical health, their robustness, how are they, or are they affected, or are they just like anybody else?
Well, it really depends on the point at which you begin someone on therapy. If you have done considerable damage, the virus has done considerable damage to a person's immune system, and they have wound up with multiple complications because either they were not diagnosed in time, or when they were diagnosed, they didn't have access to or take medication. Once you get the viral to below detectable level, they still could have quite a normal life, but they may have some residua from the damage that had been done during their untreated period.
Okay.
However, if you treat someone as early as you possibly can and get that level of the virus to below detectable pretty quickly, you avoid that damage, and people can actually live really quite normal lives. I mean, I have many, many patients, I'm sure Sarah does also, who you treat early who are just functioning perfectly in society, perfectly well. I mean, it's obviously not completely normal, but it really is close to that, which is one of the reasons why we insist about trying to get people who might be at risk. First of all, everyone should be tested for HIV at least once. And those who are in risk category should be tested as often as the physician feels is appropriate according to the risk behavior of a person. Because if you can identify a person early, it really answers your question of how healthy they're going to be, because the sooner you get them on therapy, the better.
Everyone should be tested at least once? Everyone?
That is correct.
Like, why? I mean, people who, I don't know, go from youth into, straight into a monogamous relationship. When would someone who doesn't engage in what might be called risky behaviors find cause to be tested for HIV?
Well, that's a good question, and sometimes that puzzles people. But our experience with human nature is that if you start saying, well, you don't need to be tested or you don't need to be tested, that people sometimes don't even fully appreciate that they may have been at risk. I mean, anyone who's had a sexual partner and you don't know who that person is, whether or not that person is infected, then even though you have some sort of confidence that they're not infected, you just don't know. So that's the reason why we say essentially everybody at least once.
Okay.
And then if you're in a situation of the way you're living your life, it is highly unlikely that you're going to be infected, then that's okay. But for those who might be having unprotected sex, be they heterosexually or gay sex or what have you, there is the risk there that you might need to be tested more than once, every whatever period of time, depending upon the level of your risk.
Okay, so with these new therapies, you say people can lead pretty or even very normal lives. That brings us to sexuality. And back to Charlie Sheen for a moment. Again, on the Today Show, talking with Matt Lauer, Lauer asked him about the possibility that he had transmitted HIV to someone else.
Have you knowingly, or even perhaps unknowingly, transmitted the HIV virus to someone else since your diagnosis?
Impossible.
Impossible, says the, again, sort of famously promiscuous actor there. Lauer went further, asked him about unprotected sex, and listen to Sheen's response.
Have you had unprotected sex on any occasion since your diagnosis?
Yes, but the two people that I did that with were under the care of my doctor, and they were completely warned ahead of time.
Okay, that we want to examine a little bit. Now, some women have come out since and said, what do you mean? We didn't know. But we're interested in transmission. When he says it was impossible that he may have transmitted HIV knowingly to someone, does that make sense to you, Sarah Rowan, the word impossible?
Impossible is a pretty extreme word. I think that if you're taking medication successfully and your viral load is undetectable, particularly over time you've had an undetectable viral load, the likelihood of transmission is very, very low, particularly if you're using condoms. To say impossible would be more definitive than I would be comfortable with.
I mean, here's his own doctor who also came on the Today Show. This is Robert Huizenga, Huizenga at UCLA Medical School.
Individuals who are optimally treated, who have undetectable viral loads, who responsibly use protection, have an incredibly low, it's incredibly rare to transmit the virus. We can't say that that's zero, but it's a very, very low number.
Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, help us interpret that. Low viral load, use protection, very, very low. What does that mean?
Well, I think what he's just said in that clip that you just showed, Tom, is exactly what Sarah just said, mm-hmm. that he himself said it isn't zero, but it is very, very low. Because if you take a look at some of the studies that have been done over the years, that if you have a discordant couple, for example, and one is infected and the other one is not, okay, and you treat the infected person and bring down the level of virus to below detectable level, you decrease by about 96%+ the likelihood that that person will transmit the virus to their uninfected sexual partner. If you superimpose upon that proper and consistent and correct use of condoms, which in and of themselves are not 100%, mm-hmm. but are very, very good. And if you superimpose the use of a condom together with getting your viral load to below detectable level, then you really dramatically bring it down to a very, very, very low possibility. And I agree completely with Sarah. You can never really say impossible, but it is really extremely unlikely.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about HIV infection, new therapies, and sex in the wake of actor Charlie Sheen's announcement that he is HIV positive. Dr. Anthony Fauci is with us at the National Institutes of Health, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases there. Dr. Sarah Rowan is with us from Denver, Colorado, infectious disease expert, interim director there of HIV and viral hepatitis prevention at Denver Public Health. You can join us this hour. Do you understand how HIV treatment and protection is working these days? Do you have the sense that a crisis has passed or that it's just more quiet now? Are you living with HIV, with the therapies that hold the viral count down? How is that? How's that working for you? Are you honest, open with your sexual partner, partners? Have they been honest, open with you? Chris is calling from Ravenel, South Carolina. Chris, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm right on the point of the doctor that was previously talking to you. Mm-hmm. There are so many people, not just homosexual, but heterosexual,
yep,
that are unprotected when they have sex. But they go years, for instance, as Charlie Sheen just came out, that they go years having unprotected sex. And there's no question that thousands of people have gotten HIV. Charlie Sheen has gotten HIV probably a long, long time ago, and I'm proud that he would finally come out at his age. But can you ask the doctor or any of the doctors that you'll be talking to?
Yeah.
Is HIV is close, as he said, to a very minimum where it's very, very low. But if it's very, very low, does it still pass on HIV to an unprotected partner?
Chris will do it right now. Charlie Sheen says he contracted it HIV 4 years ago. He's 50 now. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, take us into this. Protected, unprotected, the actual risk. I mean, first of all, when the therapies put the viral count so low, does that make transmission less likely in any case?
Yes. I mean, it's a general rule that when you get to below detectable, mm-hmm. that the numbers that I gave you just a few minutes ago about the diminution to less than 96% chance, you add condoms on that,
yep,
and it becomes even less. when you're dealing with a low but detectable viral load, it's really variable. We know from a number of studies, cohort studies, that if you draw a graph of the level of virus in people, the likelihood, particularly if you look at mother-to-child transmission, and there are good studies on that,
yep.
that when a mother is going to be transmit perinatally to a baby, the chances of it happening are linearly related in a direct way to the level of virus in the mother's blood. So low means less of a chance than if it were high, but if it's still detectable and it's there, then the likelihood of it getting transmitted is obviously greater than if it were undetectable.
So, Dr. Rowan, Sarah Rowan, when Charlie Sheen says he has had unprotected sex, he said with two people, but they were under the care of his doctor, and they were completely warned ahead of time. What do you make of that? Is that responsible now somehow, Dr. Rowan?
Well, I don't know all the specifics of Charlie Sheen and his partners and their health or their medical interactions with their doctors. I think that, you know, for my patients, I certainly encourage them, strongly encourage them to disclose their HIV status to any partners. And then the decision whether or not to use a condom is between the patient and their partner. There is a medicine that you can take now called Truvada that can prevent HIV infections if taken regularly by people who are not HIV positive. It needs to be taken every day. And if taken every day, really people really don't get HIV that are taking it. So that's a possibility for for partners of people who are HIV positive. And I kind of counsel my patients to really talk to their partners and talk to their partners about PrEP. That's the name, the kind of the catchy phrase that we call this this treatment for people, you know, preventative treatment for people who are HIV negative. Talk to their partners about PrEP, talk to their partners about condoms, and talk to their partners about their HIV status. And also talk to their partners about their health. If they're virally suppressed, obviously they're, as we've discussed, much less likely to transmit HIV.
I mean, I want to get into this. Dr. Rowan, Dr. Fauci, stand by. Here's a little clip. And again, we're going to the world of actors. But it helps sort of illustrate the state of HIV in these days. This is from the second season premiere of the ABC show, How to Get Away with Murder. And a couple of gay guys here, Oliver, played by Conrad Riccamora, has recently tested positive for HIV. Bear with me here. I know it's just a TV show, but it will sort of play out some of the dynamic here. His boyfriend, Oliver's boyfriend, Connor, played by Jack Folliday, tries to talk Oliver into having sex with him. Oliver won't. Oliver's the one with HIV, but he says he won't. Not yet. You'll hear them talking about PrEP. His boyfriend says, look, I'm on this, Truvada or PrEP.
I'm not going to be able to enjoy any sex if I'm worried I'm putting you in danger.
I'm on PrEP.
You have two more weeks before it works. Not to mention, you can't know for sure if you really want this.
By this, do you mean you? Because I do know that. Look, I'm not going to leave you just because of something that's not that big of a deal anymore.
It is a big deal. Okay, maybe not for you. But for me, it's a big deal.
Okay, the risk is still out there, but we're hearing how diminished it can be. Things are changing. This Truvada or PrEP, you take it every day, and it even if you don't have HIV, but if you're in a relationship or you may have sex with someone who does, it's going to push down. A lot of insurance companies, big ones, pay for this now. Not all do. If you have to get it yourself, it's $1,000 a month. Here's a public service announcement. This is put out by Public Health Solutions. It's trying to address the stigma, they say, associated with taking PrEP or Truvada. This PSA features a gay man headed out to a bar. He takes Truvada.
When straight guys have a lot of sex, they're called studs. But when gay guys have a lot of sex, they're called sluts. I like to party, and I like to be safe.
I like to party, and I like to be safe. Gay guy headed out there. It's a public service announcement. But Dr. Fauci, is that the state of planet? If you're in a potentially vulnerable community, let's say, or group where you may be having sex, are you encouraging people there who to take Truvada, this prophylaxis to diminish their chances of getting HIV?
What we try to do is we try to fashion the prevention toolkit, as we call it, because there are a lot of ways to prevent HIV infection, condoms and different ways of doing that. We try to match it to the level of risk of a person. What we do know is that we tell the patient the facts, and there are a number of very good clinical studies that show that if you take Truvada as the PrEP pill every day, religiously.
This is pre-exposure prophylaxis,
right,
or PrEP.
That's what PrEP stands for, pre-exposure prophylaxis, P-R-E-P.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that religiously, that you really dramatically diminish again. You never say zero, because zero's, you know, quite an impressive word, and impossible is also. But you dramatically decrease. One of the problems that you can run into with PrEP is that sometimes people forget or do not take the drug. And we have really good clinical studies to show that for those people who take the drug religiously, the level of infection acquisition in those people is dramatically low, almost unmeasurable. But yet there are many people in the study who did not take Truvada religiously. And even though they were on the study of the effectiveness of Truvada, they still, some of them, got infected. And the efficacy of it went down, depending upon the study, to 70%, 40%, 30%. You have to take the pill. But if you do take the pill, PrEP in the form of Truvada is an excellent way to prevent infection in people who are at high risk of getting infected. You just don't want to have PrEP, because all drugs have some side effects. You don't want someone to be on PrEP if they really are essentially at no risk or very, very minimal risk. But if they're in a risk category that is a reasonable risk, then it is okay to recommend or provide for them the option of taking PrEP.
Dr. Rowan, I mean, you're in public health, Denver Public Health there. How do you see people responding to these different options, to the toolkit? I mean, when PrEP first came out, Truvada, reading here in the New Republic, they're talking about a generational divide that was there between, in particular, gay folks who had lived through the big die-off in the terrible early years of HIV/AIDS and became very much condom true believers, and saw a younger generation that saw condom use as just one tool. Reading here from there, they said, to some, the suggestion that we downplay condom usage reads like heresy, bordering on willful ignorance. And they say, yet are young people necessarily making risky choices? Isn't it more likely in the face of myriad conflicting messages about what it means to contract HIV, they're making decisions that better reflect the reality of their lives? What's wise? What's actually going on, Dr. Rowan?
That's a lot to consider. The role of the condom has not really changed. It's still crucial. It's important for preventing HIV, but also for preventing other sexually transmitted diseases. We've had an increase in syphilis in Denver this year. And so obviously taking PrEP or Truvada doesn't affect that at all. But like you said, the reality is that people don't always wear condoms, and condoms aren't 100% either, or condoms break. So we try to look at it holistically. If you're at high risk for HIV, consider taking PrEP. But no one is encouraging people not to wear a condom.
1.2 million Americans HIV positive now. A number of new infections sort of steady at about 50,000 per year. That's in the United States. Dr. Sarah Rowan, Dr. Anthony Fauci, please stand by. Tom Coates joins us now from Los Angeles, professor of global AIDS research at the University of California, Los Angeles, director of the UCLA Center for World Health. Tom Coates, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. What's the global picture on HIV and AIDS, the presence of it now, the trend line, sir?
Well, the picture is optimistic. And I think I have to say, and I'm sure Dr. Fauci covered this, the improvements rest upon the incredible investment that the United States government and other governments and pharmaceuticals have made in HIV and the improvements in the ability to suppress HIV. Dr. Fauci has led that effort, and the world's improvements rest on that. So we have about 37 million people living with HIV. The vast majority of those are in sub-Saharan Africa in what's called a generalized epidemic.
One in 20 adults there, I'm reading here, infected.
Countrywide, the prevalence is much higher in certain regions. In certain regions of South Africa, for example, in Lesotho, in Botswana, it can be as high as 1 in 4.
Wow.
And among women, it's even higher. In women, say in their 30s, it can go up over 50%. So the challenge is there, but we have to put it in perspective. New HIV infections have declined by 35% since the year 2000. And in 61 countries around the world, HIV infections have decreased by more than 20%. So it's clear HIV is going to be in the human population for a long time to come.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to keep up this battle. We called it the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. It's still an emergency, but it's going to be an emergency for a long time. But we are making progress.
What about the immunotherapies that lead to these very, very low viral loads that Charlie Sheen's doctor, you know, says means he's essentially healthy? How widespread is the use of those? How does the use in the United States compare with Europe, compare with Africa?
Well, certainly in the United States and Europe, there has been much greater access to antiretroviral therapy. It was in the year 2000 at the Durban AIDS Conference, and President Clinton and President Mandela were on stage, and everyone at that conference declared that it was unconscionable that people in rich countries should have access to these life-saving medications, whereas people in low- and middle-income countries did not. That led to the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief under President George W. Bush, and it has been a phenomenal success. So we now have about 40% of people with HIV around the world on HIV medications, which is not only good for them, but it's also good for the population because it reduces their viral load and therefore reduces their ability to transmit HIV to others.
Let me turn to our callers, if I may. Chase in Dayton, Ohio. Chase, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say that this is incredible. You know, there's a lot of research and a lot of great medications that are being shared in the world today. But just kind of wanted to harken back to Charlie Sheen's case.
Yeah.
Even if you do have a low or undetectable viral load, it's not appropriate to not share that with any partners that you may have.
That's the allegation that some are making against Charlie now, yeah.
And I just wanted to share kind of my personal perspective that the exact same thing happened to me about this time last year.
What happened, Chase?
You know, it was just an experience where the person did not share their HIV status, even though it was undetectable, that came to light after the fact, but not sharing that up front put me in a terrible state, you know, stressful and just completely worried for weeks and weeks. The HIV test can take 3 to 6 months to confirm your diagnosis. And thankfully, I've found out since then that I'm HIV negative. But
good.
Just really the main point was wanted to say, even with all these great research and medicines out there, you must share your status. It's not an excuse to be low or undetectable.
Chase, was it protected or unprotected, if I may ask?
It was protected, but still, you know, that I think that kind of goes besides the point there is a level of trust that this is someone I had known for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Chase, I very much appreciate your call. Sarah Rowan, how big an issue is this? Are people getting more cavalier about openness with the sense that, well, it's normalized, it's under control, there are drugs, why talk about it?
Well, as I mentioned before, we do have an increase in syphilis, so we suspect that condom use may be decreasing, whether that's because of PrEP or because people who take meds and have undetectable viral loads feel more comfortable having sex without condoms is really unclear. We don't have enough data to actually tell us that. But certainly, we definitely encourage people to disclose their status, and we encourage people to support people who are HIV positive to take their meds and stay undetectable as well. It's really kind of a comprehensive, holistic approach that is what's going to bring us out of this epidemic.
Tom Coates, Sarah Rowan's in a city that's looking to end the HIV/AIDS epidemic by 2030. Globally, I guess you're saying that is not going to happen. It's going to be around for a long time, part of our picture.
It's going to be in the human human species for a long, long time, unless we can come up with a very effective vaccine as well as a cure. And there's science going on in that realm. I was 10 years old when they gave us the polio vaccine, and I remember kids on my street with polio, and I was terrified.
Yeah.
And we still have polio. we're almost done with it.
Yeah.
They're tracking it down, but it's taken a long time to do that with a very, very effective vaccine.
Tom,
so it'll be with us for a while. This will be a challenge that we have to keep up.
Tom Coates at UCLA, thank you very much for being with us. Sorry to have to jump here, Tom, but thank you for joining us. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about HIV infection, new therapies, and sex in the wake of actor Charlie Sheen's announcement that he is HIV positive. Dr. Sue Rowan joins us from Denver Public Health. She's right in the middle of all this from Denver, Colorado. Dr. Anthony Fauci is here, winner of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, in no small part for his work, very important work, in exactly this large arena. Joins us from the National Institutes of Health. We're going to hear in a moment from Dr. Lewis Picker, who's doing research on a HIV-AIDS vaccine. He'll join us from Portland, Oregon in a moment. You can join us. Are you living with HIV? Are you honest, open with your sexual partner or partners? Have they been honest with you? Are you in a community where lots of people take Truvada or PrEP, even when they're not infected, and then feel freer to have sex, even unprotected sex? What do we think about the way all this is going? Online, people responding here. A listener asks, growing up in the 80s and 90s, the fear of HIV was good incentive to stay monogamous and pass on one-night stands. But with this fear abating, are STDs going to rebound? We're already hearing from Sarah Rowan that in Denver, the case is yes on syphilis there. Nationally, I'm looking here, higher numbers on gonorrhea. So, you know, take protection seriously here. I've got more questions. Adam says, would you ask the panel about the legal ramifications involved with the transformation of HIV from a known carrier to an unknowing partner? Dr. Fauci, what about that? What is the law? Is it the law that you have to tell a potential sex partner that you are an HIV carrier, if that's the right word?
Tom, this is a complicated issue, and it varies from state to state. There have been attempts, sometimes successful, to prosecute people who they feel are deliberately exposing someone in a reckless manner by not disclosing who they are. And there have been cases over the years of criminal proceedings against people who act in a malicious, deliberate way to try and infect individuals. So there are legal ramifications, but they vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
And then Adam also asks, says, a changing paradigm in antibiotic usage is that prophylactic use induces resistance. Would using the PrEP, you know, or Truvada have a potential to create HIV viral particles that are less susceptible to current therapeutic modalities, Truvada and all the rest?
The answer is if you are taking Truvada regularly and you are truly not infected, and you're not infected, and you take Truvada, there is no chance of your inducing resistance, because you can only induce resistance when you don't know you're infected and you're taking a suboptimum level of a drug. Because remember, Truvada is two drugs, tenofovir and emtricitabine, together, which you wouldn't give as standard therapy for someone who is already infected.
What if people don't take them as religiously, daily?
Well,
as
there, yeah, that's it. That is the situation that when we put some people on PrEP, on Truvada, we make very, very clear to them that they have to take it regularly and they have to intermittently get tested, because the one thing you would not want is to someone who does not know they're infected and they're taking Truvada as pre-exposure prophylaxis.
Yep.
Under those circumstances, you might induce resistance, but we try very much to avoid that by setting down strict rules and guidelines for people who are taking Truvada.
Do it right. Brad in Nashville, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Brad.
Hi, Tom. I really appreciate the conversation. I wanted to say that I have been on PrEP for a few months now.
Okay.
And it's been a great experience, actually. And, you know, I dated someone for a couple of years who is positive, and I was not on PrEP at the time.
Okay.
It was before Truvada really started to be covered by insurance, but now it's supposed to be more accessible. So I really appreciate the conversation around PrEP.
So in your case, may I ask you, Brad, and I'll get your question, sure. I promise. But so you've been in this relationship, being on the PrEP or Truvada, has it made you more comfortable in a sexual relationship with this HIV-positive partner? Do you feel pretty confident that you're safe?
I really, really do. But I will, just to clarify, I dated a person for 2 years.
Okay.
That's the previous relationship, so yep. We're no longer together.
Okay.
I am in a relationship now, and we are both negative. But we are both on PrEP just because it gives us a little bit of more control and empowers us to take care of our health. And one thing I really appreciate about it is that these regular checkups that I have to do for my doctor, they test me regularly for HIV and for other STIs.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
we know that studies have shown that for people on PrEP, you know, STIs tend to get a little higher.
Sexually transmitted disease, yeah.
I think because of a decrease in condom usage. But I wanted to ask maybe a couple of your guests if they thought that the questions asked of Charlie Sheen by Matt Lauer and also by or to Danny Pintaro a few weeks ago when he disclosed on The View and from Oprah, like if the questions that they were asking him were a little too close and a little too personal about, like, how did you get it and things like that. I think that adds to the stigma of HIV and AIDS. And I think we should really be talking about the person's health and things like that.
I'll definitely put it to them, Brad, but let me ask you. I mean, people kind of need to understand the texture of this. If we keep it all vague and, you know, very broad, maybe people just don't get what we're actually talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that, too. And I think that's a lot of the fear of HIV is not understanding the particular context in which it exists, especially within certain communities.
Can I ask you, because I appreciate your candor on this, and we're trying to keep it candid here today. It sounds, mm-hmm. if I'm understanding you correctly, I assume you're in a gay community there, and I wonder if you see Truvada changing people's sexual behavior in a way that, does it look like a good thing overall to you? Does it look like it raises risky behavior to you from your perspective?
I think so, Tom. You know, I see both lenses. Mm-hmm. I think for me personally, though, it is a way. Truvada and PrEP, in particular, is mm-hmm. a way that I feel safer and more in control of my health than I think I ever have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up, I'm in my early 30s. Growing up with the shadow of HIV and AIDS from the early 80s in my wake really hit home for me, especially as someone who grew up in the
sure.
South. That
mm-hmm.
That's something that I have remained fearful of for many, many, many years. And especially when I dated someone, you know, that really came close then. But, you know, having Truvada and talking about Truvada in my community, because I am gay,
yep.
It has opened up a whole another level of conversation about sex in our community. And it's been really empowering, and I love it. I appreciate what it's doing for me and my health, my sexual health, and a whole new way.
Brad, I'm grateful for your call. I thank you for it. Dr. Lewis Picker joins us in just a second here, but let me put Brad's question, Dr. Fauci, to you. Charlie Sheen comes out. He makes this big statement. He doesn't want to be blackmailed anymore. He's paid out a lot. And, of course, journalists ask him questions. I'm not going to expect you to answer a question on journalistic ethics, but in terms of public understanding, I mean, my sense is that we sort of need some detailed questions so that it's real and not just platitudes.
Well, again, if the person who's on the show, in this case it was Charlie Sheen,
yeah.
Was willing to go on the show, I think he could have expected that those kinds of questions would be asked. I mean, if a person is uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
with being asked those questions, then they should not answer them. I think, at least from what I've heard, that Mr. Sheen was really quite comfortable with answering any question that was asked of him.
Yeah. It's kind of tell all time or tell a lot anyway.
And in that case, it was educational for the public,
yeah.
just as you said.
We'll see how it stands up to challenges from those saying, well, he didn't tell me. Dr. Anthony Fauci, it's so great to have you here, and Dr. Sarah Rowan in Denver. Please stand by. Dr. Lewis Picker is with us right now from Portland, Oregon, Associate Director of Oregon Health and Science University's Vaccine and Gene Therapy Institute. He's a senior scientist in the Pathobiology and Immunology Division, Oregon National Primate Research Center, and he's working on a vaccine that has cleared SIV, the simian version of HIV, from monkeys, and that had already been infected he thinks, as I understand it, that the vaccine will eventually work in humans and will begin testing it for human safety next year. Dr. Picker, thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Lewis Picker, are you there? Oh, we may have lost him for just a second here. We'll get Dr. Picker right back. David in Detroit, thanks for calling, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You know, in listening to this, I've been HIV positive for 20 years now. I'm in my late 30s.
Okay.
And I have to say that I've also been undetectable. I'm very lucky. I was diagnosed rapidly, placed on medications rapidly. Mm-hmm. The PrEP and how PrEP affects people like myself, especially in the gay, I'm gay. In my community, the stigma of HIV, being HIV positive, it's been very hard when it comes to dating. We're already a small portion of the population, so then when you disclose that you're HIV positive, you kind of like whittle it down even further, and because people are so afraid of it, I found that PrEP, at least, is starting to break down some of those barriers and some of the stigma, especially amongst some of my younger counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
It's making it easier for us to date, easier to get the conversation going.
Yep.
About HIV, being HIV positive, being undetectable, and how to get a partner on PrEP, et cetera. And I'm finding that younger people that are HIV positive, since PrEP came on the scene, they seem to be more willing to come out of the dark and say, you know, listen, yes, I'm HIV positive, but I take care of myself.
I mean, that's a big relief in a person's life to be less boxed in by this. What do you think in terms of overall public health, David? Does this work out?
Well, from a public health, I just graduated as a nurse, and from a public health standpoint, getting the conversation going, having people be more comfortable about saying, yes, I'm HIV positive, no, you don't have to run from me, there are options, I take my meds, you take PrEP, we're fine, for lack of a better word. It's just talking about it. It's when you're, from a public health perspective, it's secrecy. It's when people are afraid to discuss their status. It's when people are afraid to bring these things out to the open.
Yep.
That's when it's a concern. And from a public health standpoint, when Dr. Fauci talked about testing and everybody needing to be tested on at least once in their lifetime, I think medicine and nursing, we're failing our patients, especially in an inpatient setting in a hospital. I think we need to start including an HIV test as a standard procedure, or at least broaching the topic with patients. Yeah, you might be in for having, let's say, a knee replacement, but we should at least be asking at your admission, have you ever been tested for HIV? And while you're here, why don't we get you tested?
There's a view from the front line, and I appreciate that right across the board there, David. I appreciate your call from Detroit and those observations. I want to grab Dr. Lewis Picker while I can. He's working on a vaccine. We want to know about that. Dr. Picker, sorry we lost you before. Thanks for joining us from Portland, Oregon.
Pleasure to be here.
How does this vaccine work in monkeys? How would it work in humans?
Well, we will have to wait and see how it works in humans. But in monkeys, the vaccine that we've developed has been shown to, in over half the vaccinated animals, when they're subsequently challenged with a very virulent SIV, which is the monkey equivalent of HIV that causes AIDS in monkeys. These animals that are vaccinated initially control the infection, and then remarkably, animals that have a very low level of infection ultimately clear it. And so that's the real surprise in our work, is that these infections have thought to always be permanent. But
what's the success rate or the effectiveness rate, if that's the right question, doctor?
And so far in our monkey population, it's about 54% of monkeys will have this kind of protection, what we call control and clear protection, and it's been replicated in over 65 monkeys. So it's a very clear observation that these animals that are vaccinated can get infected, control the infection, and then over time clear the infection.
What are the prospects for this working at least that well in humans?
Well, these are monkeys. It's a very similar disease in monkeys, but monkeys aren't human. So the only way we're going to know is by taking it forward and through clinical trials and testing it. and that's what we're doing. We're hoping to take a human version of our vaccine vector, of our vaccine, into a phase one clinical trial in about a year from now. And we're in the process of going through manufacturing and regulatory applications to be able to do that.
I don't know, but a 54% success rate, or control and clear protection rate, as you say, is that good for a vaccine? Is that high, low, average? It just sounds like barely more than half. It wouldn't give me that much confidence.
Well, I mean, first of all, the virus that we use in the monkey is anywhere from 10 to 100-fold more potent than HIV is itself, in terms of how quickly it causes AIDS and the level of viral replication, the speed and overall rate of viral replication. So it's very likely that it could work differently in humans, perhaps better. It's also possible that other vaccine types that are out there would work together with this vaccine. Our vaccine is based on cellular immunity, on T cells that kill virally infected cells. There's other vaccine concepts out there by my colleagues that focus on generating antibodies that help prevent infection. And so it's possible that a combination of these two approaches could, you know, result in efficacy that's 70, 80, or 90%, and that would make a huge dent in the epidemic.
Would that be the kind of efficacy that we'd see in a polio vaccine, or would it still be lower? Are we talking about HIV immunity, or taking this to diminish the chances of contracting?
You know, I think one thing we have to understand is that the chances of getting HIV from any given sex act is already fairly low, and if we can diminish that so that, you know, 80%, that makes a huge difference. It's a binary process. That means people either get infected or they don't. And if you prevent 4 out of 5 from getting infected, that could have a huge effect both for that person's life, who avoids getting the virus, as well as for the overall public health of the community. So, you know, this is a very difficult virus to make a vaccine to. There is no natural immunity. People who get it never get rid of it. And so we have to go where nature hasn't gone before. So I would be very pleased with a 70-80% efficacy, and I'm sure everybody in the field would as well.
The whole world will be watching your research as you go forward with it there. Dr. Lewis Picker at the Oregon Health and Science University's Vaccine and Gene Therapy Institute. Good luck, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Sarah Rowan at Denver Public Health, you're so great to join us today. Good luck with your work in Denver. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Anthony Fauci, you've been right at the heart of this. Sounds like that's kind of promising what we hear there from Dr. Picker. Is it to you?
Yes, but as he said correctly, we have to wait to see how it works in humans. That's always an important stumbling block that we need to get over, but we're looking forward to that with some anticipation.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, the National Institutes of Health, thank you so much for joining us again. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.